And we are back. We've got Kumzal from Viroid Games, and his talk is it's Pitch Deck 101 for indies. It's super important to know what to do with your pitch deck, what not to do with your pitch deck, who your audience is, all of that good stuff. So take it away, Kumzal. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is very exciting for me because 3.5 years ago, I attended one of these conferences. It was August 2020. And since then, there have been many versions of this sort of talk, pitch deck, you know, all the business aspects of being an indie. I guess this is my turn to give back. So I'm excited. Also, I've learned since then, like kind of by, I mean, observation, experience, my own mistakes. So this is in no means sort of do it all and then you will 100% succeed. But I think I've learned enough what to do and what not to do. So a bit more about my background. I started my company, Viroid Games, 3.5 years ago. But by training and sort of by experience, I did web development. So that's like a transfer from one domain to a different domain, but the rules are kind of different. Nevertheless, topics-wise, pitching and preparing a pitch deck, sort of like a sales talk, presenting something, asking for something, it is actually a tough skill to master. Asking for help, if you don't know how to do it delicately, it may backfire, that sort of thing. It has some intricate parts. So this is what I am envisioning for today's agenda. So we are probably going to go in this order because this is a presentation. But when you prepare your pitch decks, I think an important sort of like a name there is the deck. It's like a card game. When you are given a deck, you want to play the best card that's going to serve you. So you don't want to play the cards in your hand the way they were presented to you. So when you create your deck, you are not presenting every slide in that order. So that's like, keep that in mind. So use like the best available means to you. But this is kind of the plan that I'm going to follow. First is why you would like to approach a publisher. But when you do approach and talk, whatever you talk during that session, well, maybe talk about it with your friends, but then don't share that information with other publishers or other business people. Keep that info confidential because it's a small world. People are going to know that you are kind of leaking sensitive information. So because these are the matters you are going to talk with publishers, most likely funding. That's the number one reason I'm imagining you'll want to talk to a publisher. I grouped some cases here. The right-hand side is when you use the publisher's resources. They will make those resources available to you if you ask. Some publishers come with these services available to you. Also, like whereas these topics are more concrete, the expertise topics are more abstract. So it's more knowledge-based versus process or sort of project management base. And lastly, maybe we'll talk about this in its own slide, but there's a credibility factor why you are approaching a publisher. So I'm going to leave the funding to the sort of near the end. That kind of it deserves its own sort of section. In the resources area, marketing and PR, some of these publishers will offer sort of like their in-house marketing options. If you're already working with another marketing agency, you may want to mention during the pitch talk. Otherwise, you are going to use their marketing resources. This may take the form of, say, you want to talk to an influencer. Well, let the publisher influence the influencer. So instead of reaching all these journalists, if the request is coming from a publisher, your game will be getting a higher chance of being marketed. So there's, again, an element of credibility here. So use their network to your advantage, because otherwise, like if you're a small studio, you are just a person trying to reach out and you are trying to build credibility, whereas a well-known name and maybe like these people already know each other. So a simple phone call or an email between these two people will solve your issue. Distribution and representation is another topic. This may be country or platform specific. In some countries, some types of games, it's sort of a gray area. You need a different publisher to be in the like in that market, or some publishers are well known to be like releasing games in the mobile market, whereas some are more console publishers. So if you want to be represented in a specific market, maybe you want to choose the best publisher for that case. And also, when you are dealing with third parties, let's say console people, you probably want to use an intermediary instead of reaching out as a small studio and talking to people in higher up like positions. Use the help of the publisher so they can do the work for you. So you are basically utilizing every available resource, whether it's marketing or more sort of corporate transaction and communication. QA and localization are two topics that you may want to handle in-house, or maybe you are handling it by hiring a third-party company. So like, okay, outsourcing it. This is something you may want to mention in your pitch deck. Maybe like we'll look at the budget sections. It's like whether this is already budgeted in, or you are asking for extra funding for this option, whether this is going to be handled by the publisher. So that way they are going to know how much effort they should have on their end, whether when you are discussing the percentages, how much of the revenue is going to be shared between companies, how much they are bringing to the table, and how much you're handling on your own. So these are extra items that you may want to mention. If the localization is already something that you are going for, it might be helpful. Time and focus may not be that obvious, but that's another benefit you are also going to get if you work with a publisher. You are going to have milestones and sort of frequent check-ins. So that's when you report the progress of the game and like shortcomings, whether there are problems. So in a way, it breaks this sort of cycle of like you keep working on your game, you're always busy, you're always working, but it never feels it's getting somewhere, or the finish line is never there. The project management, in that sense, if they hold you accountable, so it may give you structure. Maybe you this is the maybe the only benefit you want to work with a publisher. It may not seem that obvious. Funding is number one, but the project management, if it's something they can actually hold you accountable, so utilize that too. Because especially in small teams, at some point the roles get blurry. Everybody is doing everything, but then you lose focus and time goes by, then frustration kicks in. So that may also be helpful. So those were more concrete reasons, and these are more sort of strategic, abstract reasons. Maybe you don't know much about how some aspects, some like portions of your game should be monetized, whether it's DLCs or just the core game. If you want to release it in a specific country, you have no idea how the payment system is going to work out. I think a good example here is Exola. They take care of country-specific payment rules. I think I remember an example, like in India, people don't use conventional ways of paying for games. Like credit cards, they are an obvious choice for, let's say, Western market. But if you still want to sell your game in some places where the preferred payment method is not what you imagine, you may want to work with a third-party company, or like maybe the publisher is already privy to this sort of information. Again, in some types of games, in-game purchases, microtransactions, that sort of thing, like the game will be released, but at some point you are going to need server space, like live ops. This means databases should be up. Then you are looking for a person who's going to maintain sort of like an operation more so than building the game itself. These are all extra expenses. If you know the numbers, if you can present a projection, that's all like for the better, present them to the publisher. Or if you don't have those numbers, ask for their help. They probably have previous examples, either like successful ones or the failed ones. They are gonna make you aware of the the edge cases. So market trends and player preferences, these two sort of go hand in hand. One is major, like market trends is more sort of like a major picture, and this is more minor stuff. What it means is like, well, right now some games may be hot, but by the time you get it out there, the trend may be over. In most cases, the indie production timeline, well, historically it used to be shorter, but since now there's a higher demand for more complex games, this pushes the production times to like 2-3 times like more than they used to be. And so the term indie is, in a sense, has lost its meaning. Like, does it mean like one individual or a team of individuals? That's all like other academic conversation. But so it's like strike when the iron is hot, and you gotta get the game out there when it matters. It may seem like it kind of matters now, but by the time it's ready, it may be too late. So these are major sort of economic trends. And sometimes these may be affected by political stuff or just economic downturn, that kind of thing. It's not always about like the taste, whether that kind of game is liked anymore. There may be different factors as well. I mean, at some point there was like I don't know, I'm guessing it's over now, like chips crisis, like the graphics cards. Like if there aren't enough graphics cards sold, like maybe it's not a good time to market high-end, like high-quality games, because your sales will be limited by sort of the hardware sales. So like certain things have to align in a sense. And player preferences, this is more micro sort of level of management. This may be age preferences or gender choices, whether this kind of game is liked by, like a certain demographics is going after this sort of game. Whether in that particular game you have a lot of the microtransactions happening around, certain items, and because the audience is preferring this, that sort of thing. Again, you may have done your market research, or you may try to instill the confidence in the publisher that, well, hey, at the end of the day, I mean, this is kind of like the developer me speaking. It's like, I'm gonna create an item in a database. It's gonna have a piece of graphic like this. In a way, I don't quite care whether it looks like this. It's going to be bought by a certain type of audience. I can basically make anything I want or anything you want, but it's like, what is the best move so we can increase the sales? Like, this is sort of the ugly side of like maybe game development, because you are now entering the money aspect of like game development. Like the artistic choices and all that stuff is sort of pushed aside. So again, like if they have this data, you may want to ask for that. And from here, we are going to look at the credibility. I believe this is not a real book, but it is a nice book. I wish this would be published as a book. I'm using the graphic from your platform. So it's a very big PDF file, and I think you guys have over 800 publishers. Correct me if I'm wrong. And so indies could find publishers listed by like whether they are serving a specific market, that sort of things. Like we are they are mobile publishers, console publishers. So at the end of the day, what is probably best for in the indie studio is you want to approach the publisher that's going to help you the most in the sense that you don't want to bring your PC game and pitch it to a mobile publisher if they are well known for releasing mobile games. So you want to create that sort of match, and also working with big names, they may have the money, but maybe they are not going to be interested in very small studios. And if you go and pitch your games to smaller publishers, if your idea is big, maybe they don't have enough resources to support your idea. So it has to be a match here. So you have to find something that works out for both parties, because chances are you are going to be more aware of their presence in the market because like their name will have made into a book or list like this, but they are not going to know anything about you. So you have to first establish the connection, then gauge that you two are going to work it out. So this has to work both ways. And I'll just let this sit on the screen for a few seconds, and then I'll read it out loud because I think this is an important point. So a publisher is essentially interested in their exit strategy. They are going to invest and they will want to make money at the end of that project. So this feels sad because we often have emotional attachment to our creation. For us, it's a wonderful work of art, but this is where the rubber hits the road. They are entering this relationship, or like they are going into this relationship for making money. I mean, it's as simple as that. There's nothing ugly about this. They are a business. You better treat your own activities as a business too. If you treat it as a hobby, then it's like, well, then maybe like, why are you having this conversation with a publisher? So take it seriously. So that's why I'm sort of scratching this game here. It could be any kind of project. Like people have been pitching their ideas regardless of the type of project. It could be a construction project. It may take a few years, millions of dollars, and yet people are pitching whether such development should be, done and handled by how many parties, all the details. So pitching is not unique to making games. But the publisher or investor, whoever is putting the money and effort, they are gonna want their investment back. So two things here I'm gonna try to highlight. I hope the Zoom functionality works. It doesn't, but so the investment part on their end, that's important, and you have to show that your creation is going to be valuable. So those two things are important. So let's get to the mechanics of it a bit. So pitch deck itself or the pitching process. So this may also go sort of in person or online or offline. So let me break down those notions a bit. So before the pandemic, of course, conferences. Meet people in person, and you are still going to have, like, okay, roughly half an hour, or make a phone call or send your pitch deck in an email, or I don't know, like print out slides. Like, you have different versions of sending your deck to publishers. At the end of the day, though, like a book that I read a while ago, this 3-minute rule by Brand Pimbidik. So you essentially have more or less 3 minutes. So people have enough attention to basically understand the gist of your pitching material. Like in 3 minutes, you grab their attention. This is in a sense an elevator pitch, which is sort of a mythical concept that is like in 10 seconds, like by the time the elevator goes to the next level, you have sort of that short amount of time. That's like a wasted opportunity if you are talking to someone for that short amount of time. Like he's not, that person in the elevator is not your audience because he's just a random person. That analogy has been used and it's kind of a weird thing to say. It's like a Hollywood like movie line. So chances are when you send a pitch to a publisher or someone like directly, you should have done your homework. Like you should already have gauged that, okay, this person, this company, I think they're going to be interested in my work. And you are curating your pitch deck so that you increase your chance so that they spend the next 3 minutes and then they are hungry for finding out more. Now, this is maybe more true for offline pitches. Like you send your PDF file in their, like through their contact page. Or you write an email, there's an attachment. So after those 3 minutes, if they're interested in finding like more about your creation, maybe you're going to get another email follow-up stuff, you know, will start. But during a conference like this, although you feel like you have half an hour, you are still going to grab that person's attention in 3 minutes. So that means... although I see a lot of pitch decks these days that actually have a lot of lore, and I actually keep hearing this during this conference a lot, like just don't put lore in your pitch decks, because they usually, like the pitch decks that I see, they have business value, but they are so mixed with, like people take chunks from their game design document, all the lore and stuff, then they merge it. That's really unnecessary, like at least what I've been told and what I experienced kind of worked out better. So a short sentence about what your project is. Again, like take this formula and apply it to another field. It doesn't have to be a game, but the person who's reading your pitch must know what it's about. So we are here to know about this game. So this game is, use an adjective, maybe a genre or two. In this game, you do use a verb and noun, like you do something. And then if people don't have a clear idea, then use an analogy. The game is inspired by some well-known creations. Again, like this could be a movie idea. But unlike those games or movies, ours is different in this way. So based on this formula, so here's sort of an example, a more concrete case. Mr. E is a story-rich, turn-based adventure game. So now we get the genre, and we understand that it has story elements. And in this game, we control a confused robot. And like right away, okay, turn-based, I'm imagining certain things, but how do I control the robot? I still have no idea. But when I say it is inspired by Hitman Go and Lara Croft Go, well, okay, if I don't know those games, I can look up and then I understand that, oh, okay, mechanics wise, it's gonna go like this. But unlike those games, Mystery is story driven because Hitman Go and Lara Croft Go, they don't have story limits. Now their core versions have story limits. In Hitman, you play an assassin and you are given missions and you go and like basically solve difficult problems. There are like puzzle elements, action scenes, all that stuff. So the story element is in the core game, but the Go version is you play level after level. They are meant to be short and there are usually very specific ways to solve that puzzle, that level, maybe one or two ways, but not that many. The flexibility that you get in Hitman, or the richness the richness in storytelling, they don't exist in the Go versions. But you may imagine while playing the Go versions, like, well, okay, if this was in the core game, this is probably how that level would have played out, that sort of thing. So it's complementing each other. So why don't we bring story elements to Go games, in a sense? Like, that's the unique selling proposition. So to add one more element, okay, now that the story element is going to be introduced into this new game, so how will we explore the story? We are going to make our story decisions, or the story will be revealed in a way that was done in Pillars of Eternity. So you have portions of text displayed, and you are choosing among possible options. Maybe there's going back and forth between dialogue options. Maybe previous choices will affect your available, like, future choices. So if you play Pillars of Eternity, you know how the story is told through text options. And maybe we can add voice acting, but that's not really essential, because some of these games don't have voice acting. And that's something you may want to bring up later in your pitch deck, as like, okay, budget options, what if you have voice acting or not? So those are the details. So at this point, we are not talking about the lore. There's just the robot, mechanics, and sort of competitors or similar games. Next big thing is the ask. So in the beginning, I mentioned that what I'm doing right now is presenting. But when you are talking to a publisher, you are pitching. So use the deck to your advantage. But that also means include an ask in your slides. So whether it's a number for financials, meaning like, this is the money we are asking for, or you are confident that you are going to release your game. Like, you don't need financial help, let's say. That's like perfect world. But for some reason, you suck at marketing, so you want to increase your wish list number. So what are the ways the publisher can help you to, you know, bring those numbers up? Or you already have the game out in, like, on one platform, but you want to port it to a different platform. So maybe they know the right people to talk to. So what is the ask is the most important part, perhaps, because I noticed that a lot of these pitches look like presentations, like most students do, like a school project, and it ends silently. It's like, I've done my homework, and it just, like, it ends. But then why are we having this conversation? Like, in a school setup, I mean, even then, the point of doing a presentation is that you are going to get a score. So there is some expectation. But people find it hard to mention a number or like what their request is in a pitch. So this may have something to do with, I don't want to call it insecurity, but maybe sort of like not being used to like asking for things. So in a sense, like, this is the sales aspect of game development. So there's the business, running a business, there's marketing aspect, and the pitching is the sales. Like, you are basically selling an idea, a creation, and you're asking for money. Like, that's the whole point of sales. And again, if it's not money, if it's wish list or porting, it doesn't have to be money, but there has to be an ask. And it's okay not to know everything. And if you highlight the core points, and if you see that they're interested in knowing more about certain parts of, not the game itself, like not the lore, maybe if they're interested in the lore, of course share, but since I'm hoping that's not going to be the center point of your pitch, but say maybe they're going to be interested in team size or what has been done, what has not worked out, that sort of thing. So instead of going going in order and looking at all the slides, skip to the parts that matter to that particular publisher. Because you're going to end up talking to many, and each one will be interested in a different aspect. So like, let them take the lead. And so like, that's okay. So, and then take mental notes and then real notes and say, well, it seems as if we are getting a lot of questions, and like the person who's doing the pitching and either personally or as a team, like we need to put more meat on this bone here. It's like we need to present more concrete stuff. So let the sort of previous pitchings be like they can be very helpful as you go. So rejection in a way could only mean that you can do better next time. So, and these are some of the essentials you can put. Of course, budget and finances. So that means like you could have a large, like just like really enlarged, like font size, some big number, and maybe a breakdown like, okay, a portion of this is going to go into this sort of expense, that kind of thing. We're going to look at that in the next slide, I believe, because that's kind of where a lot of people are excited about, I'm guessing, like when it comes to pitches. Similar works with your competition. So in that opening line, when you talk about like our game is blah blah, and like these are sort of similar games, like they are directly your competition, or they kind of used to be like products similar to yours. So take a like a best, average, and like worst case scenario, and to find those samples, you can use. I provided a few links here, so they can be quite helpful. Some of these have, I think, paid options where you get to see more sensitive data, or maybe like in this case, it's worth accessing that data. And most likely, like, I mean, publishers will have access to the data as well. But you will look like you've done your homework, and that's very important. Also, in your project, mention what challenges and risks you are anticipating, and if possible, what ways you are like, what methods you have in place that you are going to use to mitigate those challenges. In some countries, military service is obligatory. Maybe you or a team member will have to do their military service, that sort of thing. So now, let's say you are talking to a publisher, but in 3 months you'll be, I don't know, shipped to some place, and maybe 6 months later you'll come back, and then the production of the game can start. Like, there's no maybe risk in hiding that, because if things start to get to a point that they are actually sweetened, like sweet about like giving you money, but then at the last second you talk about some like important life issue, it may look very unfortunate. So just say like, this is what's going to happen. I know it's a risk, but just be upfront. Like anything that you think is going to be creating a risk for the project. The same goes for internal and extended team members. Remote working has become a common part of our lives right now. Time zone differences, internet speed, language barrier, these are all, like all important notions right now. So it's worth mentioning how long have you worked together, how many projects have you finished, that sort of thing. Whether the team members have skills that can complement as you go. So something worth mentioning. And if your game has had some development time, talk about that too. Like, this is what's been achieved, but maybe you saw that it makes sense to stop right now, and we are hoping to get funded. And after we get funded, it's going to take us like 9 months to finish. So when you say 9 months, like as the planned production time, it doesn't mean 9 months from the moment, like right now we are talking, but it's like after we are funded. So, and because otherwise, like as you keep having your pitch conversations, like every week you're talking to someone new, and that 9 months hasn't even started, that kind of thing. So I think people already know this, or publishers on their end, they anticipate this. But update your slides so that the dates kind of don't look outdated. So now, of course, the big item, the funding. So two books, especially the blue one on the top left, the Game Dev Budgeting Handbook. It's very detailed, very important. I believe tomorrow there will be a talk, Kimberly, He's going to give a talk about this topic. When I read this book and I was doing budgeting, man, that spreadsheet, it starts so, everything is so calm. It's just numbers. It's like, oh, a few columns here, and then you add months next to each other. Then it's like, well, there are a lot of moving parts. Like, I appreciate what accountants do. It's so easy to make mistakes in those numbers. And also, it's so funny. Numbers are so funny. Like, it may look utterly optimistic, but also equally catastrophic. It's either like, okay, you are swimming in money, or like you're going to make so much money, or you will never have enough money. Because like when you start adding up all the, like say you want to be paid a monthly salary and you have your team members, suddenly you look at the proportion and it's like, well, salaries will take a big chunk of the funding. And that seems like, well, maybe you should just trim it, because it's going to look a more conservative sort of like final number. Maybe it's going to be an easier pitch and sell, right, to the publisher. But I mean, they know that, like, their biggest worry would be, you say a low number during the development of your project, you feel frustrated because you feel underpaid. And then again, you get angry silently, you never speak up, and then they don't know that. Like, they believe they are paying you what you ask for. It creates friction, that sort of thing. Like, they know that they are going to pay for your cost of living, in a sense. But then again, like, this is in a way very similar to freelancing. People are paying you money and they commission you some work. Technically, it doesn't sort of start off that way, but publishers are paying money and they're commissioning a game. So it's as simple as that. So you still have some obligation, like within the confines of the contract. Like, we're not talking about illegal cases here, but you want to honor the contract. So you don't want to lowball it and then feel frustrated and ask for more money and create surprises. And if you say something so high, they are not stupid. They are not going to pay. They're going to go and seek another game that makes much more profit to them. So sugarcoating, do it at your own sort of peril. Salaries will take a big chunk. And just the big picture items in your like slide is good enough. Like, say, I don't know, 40% to this, maybe 10% to this. Like, the exact numbers, they don't matter. Like, pie charts in this sense help a lot. If you have the details somewhere, like, just maybe include them in a different slide or print them out, like, but don't put them in the slides themselves. Similarly, like a point that I made earlier, if you have story elements, they should probably reside in game design documents, like separate chunks to their own individual documents. And in a way, the whole pitching is like dating. You don't want to just go and date one time and then, I don't know, get married and, like, I don't know, have a kid. Like, you probably want to date a few times to know whether you are compatible. Like, you're not going to release all this information in one meeting, especially like if it's half an hour. Right. So the goal here is to create interest so they come back and you give more, and then you negotiate and you see if this is going to be a fruitful relationship in the long run. So try to separate things in that sense. And really, like, these two books will help you a lot. And at some point when you reach a certain number, I've been told that it's okay to inflate it by 20-30%. There are things that you probably did not envision. I mean, if this is your fifth or the 10th game, well, maybe that's going to be a more accurate budget. But if you are doing it the first time, maybe inflate it a bit. And also maybe a final note here. So this doesn't have to be for absolute beginners. I believe in the in light of like all the layoffs, people who work for AAA companies, they worked in like some level of like management capacity at those companies, and some of these people are now entering the indie world, so they are gonna have to do things on their own. So they have experience, industry experience, but in a sense, now they are also gonna go out and ask for money. So these rules apply no matter how experienced you are in terms of like coding or developing a game. So hopefully, you will get a phone call or an email one day that you're gonna be given the funds, and that's going to be given to you in chunks. Let's say 400K, maybe 30,000, at some point another 30,000, and maybe you get the last at certain point. So you will have milestones. So you need to show progress, and you need to do your budgeting so that certain months you will be running close to sort of like, oh, there is no money left, but then the money will kick in, and then you are starting in the next phase. So when you do the budget, like in a spreadsheet, you have to create your timeline and sort of like the your expenses when they are going to be triggered in a way that makes sense, so that the publisher is not forced to give large chunks because they also have their own expenses. So you have to make it easy for them to be giving the money you're asking for. So this book here on the top left, that's actually going into that sort of detail. So that deserves its own actually presentation. But basically, what goes into the numbers is your recurring costs, ongoing costs. You will be paying rent or your team members. Now, this sort of is a little bit blurry. Are you going to include the rent for each team member if they are working remotely? Most likely not. So something to think about. But you are going to have to pay bills, well, internet bill, that sort of thing. And of course, everybody is going to collect the salary. So these are the recurring costs. And then we have the sort of one-off items where you pay contractors to create a trailer, maybe you commission soundtrack, that sort of stuff. Also, lawyers, any other legal help in accounting, these are more sort of like as needed costs, but they may also add up too. If some of these items are going to turn into an ongoing thing, mention them in your pitch deck. Just like, well, like the detail is up to you. Maybe you are working with an outsourcing company. They are kind of your extended team in this sense, which is increasing the risk, because like now, who's managing the outsourcing team? Is the like does the publisher have authority on that other team, or are you handling it yourself? Like this has money implications, but also like project risk implications as well. And lastly, the sort of like licenses, software is a well-known item. Game engines, Unity and Unreal. Like I sometimes hear this, like indies are worried about paying game engine royalty fees. When you make that much money, that's going to be the least of your problems. So don't let that stop you. And of course, if you think that buying collection of art, like a package here and there, is going to speed things up, make sure you own the copyright, you buy it legally, and then they can also add up to you. If say you want to expedite, right? So like you don't want to create art yourself, you don't want to outsource it, but you just go and just right away buy the assets. That may also be part of your budget. And in the end, hopefully everything will add up to 42. So the key takeaway I want you to take from my presentation is that most likely you will hesitate, you may fumble here and there, but show to the other party that you can solve problems, that there will always be problems, but you are more than willing to solve and look into problems, and like you are there to create solutions. So they want to trust you. So indicate to the other party that you are a trustworthy person, because these numbers, they can take a different shape, right? I don't know, maybe next month your cousin will be willing to help you for free. So suddenly you have another team member who's working for free. So suddenly the budget looks better, but maybe that creates a different kind of problem, right? So there is no sort of definitive, like there's no formula here, but the trust is very important. And as I mentioned, pitching process is, it's essentially, it's not a job, but it's sort of like a sales job. It's not gonna be concluded in a happy way after one session. It should take multiple sessions, which means there is demand. So your maybe initial task is to create that demand. So this may mean, well, if you have a demo, include a link in your pitch deck trailer, of course, or if certain things are going to inflate the pitch deck, of course, keep those resources elsewhere, but link. But essentially, it's a sort of like asking for things kind of business, right? So practice makes better in that sense. So you could be using these resources I listed here. Well, although it's the third item here, if you're not part of the Indie Game Business Discord, what's wrong with you, right? So go and hang out there. And but pitching, like specifically for pitching, I mean, watch a show like Dragon's Den. It's very popular in Canada. I think the US version is Shark Tank. You're going to see a large, like a big range of people coming and looking confident, presenting their product, even the when the product is so trivial or the product is so beautiful, but people really have no talent in doing the pitching. So you will actually see that it's like asking for help or asking for a resource is very difficult. And your creation is very beloved to you, but it's really hard to talk about it. And so practice and in a sort of funny way, fail enough times that hopefully you will get the money. That like that's the thing. So you could be using these resources. So I believe this runs on Twitter, Pitch a Game Live. They do, I think, twice a year. And I'm guessing every week, Kimberly and Omar on the Discord, they also do reviews. And I think maybe later today or no, tomorrow, I think the last session, Jay is going to run a pitch review. So you can actually see different pitches and where they could use more help, that sort of thing. So try to look at pitches from different industries, how people do it, either like look at the deck itself or see live how the person is presenting their deck. And if that's sort of like not exactly public speaking, but nevertheless, you are under pressure, right? So Toastmasters is a nonprofit organization that may help you. So it's good practice. It's small groups. And you can practice. So it's also good for networking too. So like you'll probably meet people from different places. So that's also important. And then also, if nothing works out or seems to work out in the short term, it's a numbers game. I believe this is also coming from Jay. I really have to talk to him about this, but I remember him saying something like, if you send your pitch deck to 100 publishers, maybe you'll get 30 answers. And then after a while, if you send the same pitch deck or a slightly different version of it to the same 100 publishers, you will still get 30 answers, but these 30 answers will be different than the first 30 answers. So the different sort of portion of the first 100 will be answering. So people don't have time, or at that point, they are not interested in your thing. They may be interested in your stuff right now. So it's also a numbers game. So and keep in mind that you are not asking money from one person or the person you are talking to, but this person has to approve your application. The institution they are working for will be giving you the money. So you are like this is a sort of very like you have to create some kind of rapport that this person has to be vouching for you so that the organization that you work for could give you the money. So it's a relationship building exercise in a sense. So then hopefully this may have shed more light on the intricacies, that it's like less about your game, but more about like the business, the machinations of how to run this as a business. And I mean, I'm guessing since it's more mechanical and it's not mystical, so hopefully it's easier to handle. And at this point, I think I'll be more than happy to get your questions.
Thank you so very much. That was awesome. All right, let's go ahead with our first question. It's from Chaotic on YouTube. The game that I am currently building is the entry point of a four-part series that has other media involved as well. Should I include all this in the pitch deck or start with the current game?
There should be a very like short mention of the other like episodes, let's say. Like focus on the first game. Like a famous writer, Brandon Sanderson, I think, right? His name. I believe he writes three books at the same time because he's a well-known writer. Like his publisher is going to let him write three books at the same time. When you are not a published author, you're most likely signing the contract for the first book if it's light. And like there's probably enough room at the end of the first book that you can't write two more. But no publisher is going to take the risk that like they're not going to want to sign sort of three or four books like worth of contract. So focus on the first one. But you mentioned that like you have some ideas for the next games, that kind of thing.
All right, let's go to our next one. Mm-hmm. From Frozen Machine on YouTube. How do you recommend to go about when a game fits parts of a different genre, but not one specific?
Yeah, mentioned that in that opening line. So it's sort of like a... it's a Venn diagram. It's an intersection of, or like it's using the elements of two genres. Sometimes that's really actually nice, like let's call it happy accidents, where you would think that these two genres couldn't, shouldn't merge. Sometimes it works out. So, but I mean, cases like that might be harder sell because that's like you're telling them why that should work. So maybe having a demo that's working flawlessly may help, so that you show them that it works. Like they actually look at the trailer, or if there's a demo that's played and liked by players, so like support your claim by data, so that it doesn't like you're just telling them it should be fun.
All right. From Moon Flame Games on YouTube, how would you approach describing the team in the pitch deck if you need the funding to find the full team?
So if you have history with this team, like the team that you already have, you can focus on that and then say, but the game we are envisioning is going to require two times the team members. And maybe you're already in touch with, like say, like you want to hire five more people, but you're in touch with two people. Say these two people are more than willing to be on board and we still need maybe funding for three people. We think these people should be, I don't know, like two in development, one in sort of like art, that sort of thing. So this is all going to look more confident than saying arbitrarily, like we think we need five more people, but justify, like why five people? Maybe it has to be four people, who knows? Maybe it's six, but where it's crucial, showing enough details will do you more good than sort of skipping over.
All right, let's go to our next one. Alexi on YouTube, is it possible to pitch without the demo ready or without having a bunch of art to show?
So the art part is, I've seen pitch decks where it was full of art. It's the same thing like as like showing lore or like a wall of text. It may not do, like this is now entering like the, like it's a business conversation, right? But when you sit down, you at the end of this conversation, you want to have another session, like booked, or they are going to give you a phone call like some other time. But you want to have a series of these calls that you will sign a deal. So chances are showing art or like lore text is not going to help. So like that's kind of like the key here. It's like in all these answers, the summary might be, if I do this, will it help my cause? Because these games, these creations are so dear to our heart, right? Like we want to talk about our game in a very exciting way. We want to talk about like how cool it will be. But the pitches are usually like kind of like, it has to be a bit dry and like get to the point part. That's why I suggest like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank. Like at some point you're going to see candidates on those shows. They talk about their product, but then right away there are numbers like flying around. Like the sharks will ask about like whether the person who's pitching has the capacity to, I don't know, sell or produce like X number of units. It just looks a little bit dry and ugly, but unfortunately, for you to succeed or get the money, let's say, you have to be kind of like playing that game in that sense. And I think the first half of the question was demo. Yeah, anything that can strengthen your hand, a well-working demo or a trailer may not do much because you are like, I mean, it's good to look at, but one trailer may you do more kind of help than like 10 slides of like art and like just graphics. I hope that wasn't too disheartening.
Being honest is best, though, and giving them the feedback that they need.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff on YouTube. My team is mostly of a group of recent graduates, most of which have never released a title before. How transparent should we be about this, and how should we structure the pitch deck as a result?
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing this is like a university sort of, okay, is it like, did you guys work on a group project? So that kind of thing. Like we did this as a school project. Say the person who's doing the talking is like, well, you have experience working with these people. So the cohesion in the team, that's the point you can highlight. And if the publisher sees this, like, okay, it looks like this team can execute a project like this. It may look risky, but they've done like such and such. Maybe they are going to ask you questions in a way that they want to minimize the risks of like tackling a bigger project, but at least you'll be getting somewhere. Like you are, imagine like the deck, like you are trying to play the strongest card. And if that's like team, focus on that, but not the project size or not the sort of like budget size, that sort of thing. Like keep it lean and simple in some areas, but focus on your strengths. In this case, if you have work with these people on a school project, that's the important part. So they're like, it's the same dilemma where like, I'm a fresh graduate, what can I do with my resume? It's always challenging, but there are ways. Maybe one more question.
All right, they added to their question. This is the same person, Jeff. Uh-huh. It said, we worked on smaller projects individually while going to school, but this is our first together.
Yeah, that's going to be risky. Because this is now like commercial endeavors, right? They're putting money in. Like what could be the most difficult or most challenging thing in a school project? It's like, yeah, we failed our class. Okay. But I mean, no one will want to lose their money. Like when it comes to a publisher, it's like, if students fail their projects, teachers don't lose anything, or school managements don't lose anything. You pay them for another year, you go and subscribe. They are more than happy if you fail, in a sense. But a publisher will not want to divulge money like if they see this, like you cannot execute the project. So you are increasing the risks in that sense.
All right. We're sadly out of time to answer the rest of the questions. I will be putting them in our Discord. Okay. And Kumsal, if you have any time, please feel free to hop in there and answer them. If you guys are not in our Discord, make sure you join. As we mentioned, we do pitch deck reviews nearly every Thursday. They're free to sign up. And you get some valuable feedback. So next up, we have Anya Combs with, is crowdfunding still an option? So stay put. She's going to be live in a second. And thank you so much, Kumsal, for everything you did today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye, guys.